Doom do 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 do. We're back! Welcome to episode 50 of
Blue Mango Radio.
Plant friends, welcome to season 3 of Bloom and Grow Radio. I am so excited to be back. I hope that you listened to last week's short updates, announcements, and invitations episode where I want to feature you on an upcoming episode of Bloom and Grow Radio. But on it, I also announced that I'm currently on the national tour of Cats the Musical, which means that Bloom and Grow Radio will be on the road this year. So by the time this episode hits the airwaves, I'll be in Buffalo, New York. Stay tuned and make sure that you've joined my email list and you're following me on Instagram because I will be doing live events across the country in the cities that Cats is in. And I would really like to meet you in real life. Hashtag plant friends in real life. So plant friends, we are kicking off season 3 with your top most requested episode out of any topic I've ever gotten, a 101 episode on how to care for the Marantaceae family and understanding why on earth these Calatheas and prayer plants and Stromanthi can be so dang hard to care for. I would say that my most frequently asked question in my Instagram DMs or through email is, why are my prayer plants or Calathea browning at the tips? Why? I know, the struggle's real with this family. So I think the Marantaceae family has some of the most gorgeously patterned leaves. They look like they're hand-painted. I mean, seriously, some of the most beautiful I've ever seen. But they are tricky, so I'm excited to have this episode to help us keep them happy and healthy in our urban jungles. And friends, I have the world's most perfect guest to walk us through the beauty and complexities of this amazing plant family. Mark Hachadorian is the director of Glasshouse Horticulture and the senior curator of orchids at the New York Botanical Garden. I have been hearing about Mark for over a year now. His amazing plant brain, his friendly personality, and his passion for plants is kind of legendary amongst the plant community, and I'm so excited to introduce you to him and really just to have finally connected with him. So I'm so thankful to the New York Botanical Garden for lending him to us for this episode. My New York-based plant friends, especially as we are going into this dark and dreary winter, I cannot stress enough how much I am in love with the New York Botanical Garden and how my visits there this year have greatly improved my mood and just joy level. The garden is super easy to get to. You just hop on the Metro North. It's like a 10-minute train ride, and it's filled with just acres upon acres of amazing plants, amazing exhibitions. You don't even really have to go to an exhibition. Just walking around the garden is magical. No matter what time of year it is, there's always something to do and see. Last year, I made it to the orchid show and to their holiday train show. Both were completely mind-blowing. Mark is going to tell us a little bit more about their upcoming orchid show, which sounds incredible. It's running February 23rd through April 28th. So if you're in New York, and I'm sure that, like me, you're probably suffering from some version of seasonal affective disorder as the gray and dreary winter months come, please give yourself the gift of a visit to the Botanical Garden. It's truly a magical place. Speaking of planty adventures and planty magical things, I want to feature you on an upcoming episode of Bloom and Grow Radio. It's going to be called The Plant Fail Lessons. I want to hear about a plant fail that you've had and the lesson that you learned from it. Submitting your story is super easy. The instructions are in last week's episode and also the show notes today. The deadline for submissions is February 12th. So tell me your stories, plant friends. I can't wait to hear from you. Okay, I'm so excited for this conversation with Mark. He really gives us so much information. He solved so many problems and answered so many questions that I personally had about my collection. But before that, I am so excited to tell you about my dream sponsor who is working with us this month, Wally Grow. Okay, plant friends, I have been a fangirl of Wally Grow, which is a vertical garden company or a green wall company, for almost a year now. I've watched so many of my plant friends install gorgeous and creative custom green walls in their homes and spaces. And Billy and I just joined the ranks. We installed our own set of Wally Grow eco planters in our living room. And I cannot get over how ridiculously easy this install was. And I also just can't get over the beauty beauty and joy that these planters have brought us in our space. So here's the skinny on the Ecos. The Ecos, which is what their planters are called, come with all the hardware you need for installation. They literally only require drilling one hole into your wall. Billy and I kept checking the instructions because we thought we were missing one of the steps, but you literally just mount the wall bracket with the single screw that they provide. You plant up your eco, and then you just hang the eco on the wall bracket that you've already mounted. In case you are wondering more specifics on what our install looked like, head over to my Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio, and I've pinned my install stories so you can see what the inside of the container looks like, what the bracket looks like, all of the specifics. So you can use these indoors or outdoors on many different types of walls with whatever plants you like, including edibles. The leak-proof containers have perforated holes to promote optimal root health, and they have a built-in water reservoir that feeds roots directly, which can decrease your total watering by up to 75%. So what Billy and I did with our Ecos is we installed two vertical rows of three Ecos each in our living room. You can see photos in the show notes or on our Instagram. I wanted a green kind of ombre look, so we did dark green jade pothos on the top. Then in the middle, we put philodendron Brazil, which is that dark green yellow mixture. And then on the bottom, we had gorgeous philodendron lemon lime. So as the plants continue to grow down the wall, there's going to have that nice dark green to light green look. I can't wait. I'm so excited. So the single planter start at $19.99 and the four pack start at $59.99. But plant friends, Wally Grow is offering Bloom and Grow Radio listeners 20% off with the code BLOOM20 at checkout. BLOOM20. So visit wallygrow.com to check out all of their indoor and outdoor options, get some inspiration, and then use the code BLOOM20 at checkout for 20% off if you want to make a green wall of your own. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. Mark, welcome to the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast. I'm so excited to have you with me today.
It's great to finally connect with you. I'm really looking forward to this.
I've known about you and the amazing stuff you do at the Botanical Garden for almost a year now from the last orchid exhibit, and I've been secretly a fan of yours. I can't wait to mine your brain, that incredible brain of yours, for all this information today.
Well, I've heard so many wonderful things about you too, and I'm looking forward to this conversation, and I hope it leads to us finally meeting face-to-face in the future.
In real life, yes, absolutely. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do for the Botanical Garden?
Okay, so one of my great responsibilities and great joys here is being one of the directors of horticulture and one of the senior curators of tropical plants here. My role, it really, I get to oversee not only the cultivation and care of our tropical plant collections, but I also get to shape their content in being able to not only choose the type of material, how it's displayed, and really essentially become the voice for a lot of our tropical plants. Since plants can't talk, I get to talk for them and get to teach our visiting public, students, and anyone else who comes to visit the garden really about the amazing and incredible things that all these plants represent and do.
That's amazing. And what's your fancy title?
My fancy title is I'm the Director of Glasshouse Horticulture and Senior Curator of Orchids here at the New York Botanical Garden.
Oh, I love it. And you have a really exciting orchid exhibit coming up at the Botanical Garden, right?
Absolutely. I'm right in the middle of the planning and just about to begin the installation. This year's 17th annual orchid show here at the New York Botanical Garden.
Last year, the orchid show completely blew my mind. What you guys did with the design, it was unbelievable. What can we expect this year?
Well, last year we did partner with an incredible floral artist, Mr. Daniel Ost. This year, we're actually going with more of a geographic, using in-house designers and the Singapore Botanical Garden, as well as the now famous Singapore Gardens by the Bay, as a source for inspiration to frame the orchid show Singapore this year at the New York Botanical Garden. It's going to be pretty incredible.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. And when does it start?
It starts at the end of this month, and it'll run all the way through the beginning of April. The best thing to do, I always tell people, check the website, not only for the dates, how to get to the New York Botanical Garden, but there's also a lot of great orchid evenings in which you can come after hours and enjoy the conservatory sort of after dark and really experience the exhibition in a completely new way. So I'm just telling people to go right to the website, nybg.org, to make sure you can choose not only the best time for your visit, but to see all the different offerings we have for the upcoming exhibition.
Yes, especially when you do those after hours evening with alcohol kind of combinations. That's always really fun too.
Nothing like a little bit of a cocktail to help get you in the mood and really.
Exactly. So I'm so impressed with your orchid knowledge, and I would love to have you back on in the future for another orchid conversation. But today I'm excited to ask you all of the questions about the Marantaceae family.
Well, I know a lot of people know me as being, you know, the orchid geek, but really, if you talk to some of my friends, they'll tell you that no plant group is safe, and that I really love all tropical glasshouse plants. And this plant family is actually a bit of a favorite of mine. So it's a group that often people are not too familiar with when you hear all the scientific names, but they're plants that you might have seen in and around growing in nurseries, or if you visit the botanical garden, we have a really good number of specimens of all different types planted throughout our conservatory.
I noticed that pretty much every time I've come to the botanical garden, I see you using them kind of as ground cover a lot, like a lot of Calathea, a lot of some of the prayer plants, Maranta too.
Yes. One of the things in our ecosystem recreations in the conservatory here at the New York Botanical Garden, they're actually a very important part of the understory of a lot of tropical rainforests. In areas like lowland Brazil and throughout northern South America, Marantaceae are actually relatively common understory plants. And so they actually make not only ideal ground covers, but really gorgeous display specimens, because as you know, many of these have really spectacular, intricately marked, and absolutely gorgeous foliage.
Right. So I feel like Marantaceae, which for those listening, this is otherwise known as the prayer plant family. So any of the Maranta, the prayer plants we know, the Calathea, the Stromanth that we bring in as houseplants, we adore them because when I look at them, I feel like they're one of the plants that for me makes me marvel about Mother Nature the most because of how it looks like they're literally painted.
Yeah, when you have ferns as having dissected leaves and that sort of lacy pattern, you look at the Marantaceae with not only metallic patterns, stripes, but these painted foliages. I've seen them sometimes referred to as peacock plants because many of the leaves almost look like feathers in the way they're painted and patterned.
Totally. But it makes sense that they're understory plants in the jungle in real life, because that means that they're more low light tolerant, which enables them to come into our homes as houseplants.
Yes. Those particular types of ecosystem positions really are make great houseplants. Plants that don't mind a little bit of lower light. They don't mind a dimmer window. And they actually are a really ideal group of houseplants with just the right conditions for them.
Yes, before we get into the conditions and the care, what else do we need to know about the family of plants? Just a little bit more about where we can find them outdoors naturally and what plants actually fall under this Marantaceae family name? Because it's the Latin family, right?
Yes, it is the family of the Marantaceae. Mm-hmm. This whole family is a very wide-ranging tropical plant family found throughout the world. They can range from tiny little plants, only a few inches tall, to absolute giants, over 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 feet tall on some occasions. Size, shape, and pattern of the leaves, the plants themselves, is quite variable. The plants that we know and grow from horticulture, chances are if we started flipping through pictures, people would easily recognize them, especially if you're a plant person, because they're so popular and have been for many, many years in horticulture, or people growing either in greenhouses or in homes. This family of plants, even though it's mostly cultivated for either ornamental foliage, occasionally for some beautiful and really unusual flowers, there are a few members of this family that have some really interesting, I guess you would almost call it ethnobotanical uses. Arrowroot, in one of its forms, comes from a member of the Marantaceae. So if you love to cook and you've seen that around, the true arrowroot is a member of the family. But there's also, to me, I find interesting, as you dig a little bit deeper into this plant family, there's actually a species from Central Africa that has the same qualities of the miracle fruit. Have you ever heard of the where that fruit where it makes everything taste sweet?
Oh, yeah. You eat it. We used to do that in college when we would drink. It would make whatever alcohol you drank taste sweet.
Exactly. It makes lemons taste absolutely.
Lemons. Yeah, totally.
But there's actually a member of the Marantaceae that they're looking at as a source for a potential for sort of, I guess you would almost call it an artificial sweetener. So the Marantaceae is widely cultivated around the world, mostly for ornamental purposes, but includes a number of very familiar groups of plants, as we know, calatheas, and of course, the most common and most familiar being the prayer plant.
So the Marantaceae family is called the prayer plant family. So all calathea, stromanth, maranta are technically quote-unquote prayer plants?
Well, I think the prayer plant refers to that one particular plant, Maranta lucanura, and its closely related things, because of the movement of the leaves. The common name, botanical name, gets that really confusing blurry line. Mm-hmm. Not all calatheas I have ever seen referred to as prayer plants. There's a few that receive other names as well. But really, prayer plant, to me, directly refers to that maranta.
But I know that some of the calathea do, their leaves do mimic that motion as well, correct?
Yes. I guess we should sort of talk with that.
Yeah, let's dive in there.
Well, the reason where the common name of this plant family comes from is that these plants actually exhibit a very noticeable movement of their foliage between day and night. This is referred to as part of a circadian rhythm, a circadian clock. You may have heard about that in terms of referencing sleep. Mm-hmm. And it's something that all biological organisms have these circadian clocks in them, to which they experience changes in daylight and time throughout a 24-hour period. Within this group of circadian rhythms and these circadian movements is a group of movements referred to as nyctinasty, in which plants give the appearance of actually going to sleep. You've seen this on every plant from oxalis to many legumes. And of course, the prayer plant family, where in the evening, the leaves will either fold up or completely change position from day to night. So during the day, the leaves will be relatively horizontal with their upper surfaces facing towards the sky. And at night, the leaves will actually raise up and many times close towards each other, almost like hands clasped together for prayer, in which the undersides of the leaves are then exposed. And so this movement is something, though, even happens slowly. It's something that's actually noticeable to us, because you'll walk by at one point and the leaves are horizontal, and you come back a few hours later and they've completely changed position. And so this foliage and this really interesting noticeable movement is what has made this plant not only very popular, but what gives it its common name of the prayer plant.
It's mimicking sleep, obviously, but are there like processes that are like happening while it's sleeping, or what is the actual reason that the leaves fold up?
Yeah, we look at it and we, of course, in this sort of anthropomorphic way, say, well, the plant's gone to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Reality, the physiological processes within the leaves, mostly photosynthesis and respiration, are the changes that occur. So rather than harvesting sunlight to produce food at night, the plant will then start to take that stored energy and respire, and then the process of photosynthesis and respiration will be completed after dark. The plant doesn't go to bed, it won't start snoring, and it doesn't remain static in this period. It's just a physiological change. Perhaps to help aid in respiration. It could be a means of hiding itself, sort of making it less noticeable to herbivores. There's a number of different theories, but I don't think any one more than another has been linked to the reason why these leaves move all the time.
Got it. The coolest thing about plants is they've developed to become so efficient, and I'm sure it has to do with some aspect of efficiency. Bringing up the potential hiding itself, let's also talk about, because most of Marantaceae have this gorgeous purpley kind of red underside to the leaves. What is the purpose of that?
Well, a lot of the coloration on leaves, even those beautiful patterns to our eye on the upper surface of the leaf,
mm-hmm.
called cryptic coloration. So when you see these plants growing in the wild, which to us, when you take that plant out of nature, the leaves are beautifully striped and patterned. But when you put that into a forest environment, it actually breaks up your ability, or in this case, an herbivore's ability to really see the plant.
Mm.
It's like a camouflage pattern. To that way, they're not as noticeable. It doesn't attract your eye. And in some cases, it may even look like a leaf has either fungus growing on it or it's diseased, which would make it a little less palatable when you're looking for something to nibble on if you're an herbivore. But the undersides of the leaves with their dark purple coloration, a lot of that has to do with the plants growing deep down towards the forest floor. And there is that theory that as those leaves fold up and those red undersides are exposed, those leaves become almost hidden in shadow and may even appear to an herbivore's eyes that instead of being succulent and juicy, they may with that dark purple color look like they're dead and dying. So there's a little bit of camouflage and a little bit of fooling that goes on with the plant's leaves themselves just to sort of hide themselves a little bit better within the forest itself.
Okay, that's really helpful because I feel like that's one of the biggest questions we get, why the heck this is called prayer plant. But let's break down the most popular house plant genuses in the family. So the Maranta, the Calathea, and the Stromanth, do they all have, first off, am I pronouncing those names correctly?
2 out of 3. My understanding is that the last one is Stromanthi.
Stromanthi, okay.
That may be tomato, tomato.
Right, of course. I just did an interview on plant Latin, and I feel like the consensus was everybody kind of has their own way of pronouncing plant Latin, but as long as you're trying to use the plant Latin instead of the common name, you're doing good.
I don't think anyone will argue.
Yeah.
And with Latin being a dead language, I don't think anyone's around who truly learned
it. Totally. So with these three species or genus?
They are all genera.
Genera. Do they all have general care for houseplant-specific care, or do you think that within each of them, we should be caring for them differently?
Well, with the three genera we're talking about, Maranta, Calathea, and Stromanthi, which are the most commonly encountered genuses in this particular family, the care on them is actually relatively the same, which they all prefer medium to lower light conditions. There are a few that will tolerate brighter light, but in most cases, they'll do better with medium to low light. Even moisture, not drying out too much between watering, because this group of plants is not only rather thirsty at its roots, it's almost thirsty even around its foliage, in which because of their location where they grow in forests towards the forest floor, the humidity there is generally very, very high.
Mm.
And result, that's probably the biggest challenge in growing this group of plants in the home, is providing them with sufficient humidity around the plants to make sure that those leaves not only look their best, but the plants display those leaves to the best of their ability.
Humidity, I think, is a big thing with the prayer plant family, because one of the biggest questions I get on my Instagram or through listeners writing me on my website is, why are my Calathea or Maranta leaves browning on the sides? Can we troubleshoot that a little bit? And I think the main answer is humidity, right?
Yes, absolutely. You hit that nail right on the head. If you were to talk about sort of pests and problems that plague this family of plants, I think the number one by a long shot would be issues that you see related to humidity. Most notably is you get browning and dying of the cells along the edge of the leaf. So you get that kind of crispy edge. And it doesn't take much or too long of a period for that to happen, because these are rather humidity sensitive plants. So one of the things that we have to remember in growing all kinds of houseplants is that you can't really compensate for a lack of humidity by adding more water at the roots.
Right.
Because the dry air around those leaves, the reason why they burn is they actually are losing more water than they can actually resupply the leaf with. The water is essentially transpiring or evaporating faster than the plant can be provided. And that's why they wind up getting that burnt edge to the leaves.
Something that happened to me, I was helping a friend put some plants in her place, and I think I underestimated the amount of the strength of the western facing window that she had, because it was a very large window. And we put one, I think, a little too close to the window, and the leaves curled up.
That's actually an adaptive defense mechanism to not only bright light, but low humidity. So not only do Calathea's leaves move up and down, but they actually will roll up almost like, you know, into a tube to help conserve moisture on the leaf. What that's actually doing is it's shading itself, shielding its pores to prevent excessive evaporation or transpiration of water out of the plant cells. So that's kind of a defensive mechanism, a last resort before it really starts to burn. But that doesn't mean it's the end of the plant. If you return that plant to a more ideal conditions, maybe give it a little bit of extra TLC, those leaves will unfurl again and the plant will return to normal. I actually just had this happen to my Calatheas at home. We had that bit of a cold dip here in New York because, of course, the heaters started blasting to keep the house warm.
Right.
But as that heat increased, what happens is the humidity in the house plummeted, and I came home from work and saw them and had to rush my Calathea off to a bit of a terrarium for some triage to make sure it didn't really crisp up.
Oh, that's smart. Like if you have those humidity orbs or domes, if your Calathea is struggling, to kind of stick some glass around it to kind of up the humidity and kind of have like a rehab moment.
Absolutely. You can bring that plant back before any damage is done by just making sure, one, it's moist at the roots, so it has access to moisture, and then give it a little spritz on the foliage to build up some localized humidity on the leaves, and then enclose that plant. It doesn't have to be sealed tight into either a glass terrarium if it's small enough. And if that plant is a big plant like a Stromanthe or some of the larger Calatheas, to where you'd need a really big terrarium, sometimes the easiest thing to do is just a translucent bag over the top, and you can kind of build its own little personal greenhouse. A couple of bamboo stakes and a plastic bag over the top will help create an area of localized humidity so that plant can kind of get through that dry period in a protected environment. So you don't need fancy technology to help combat against low humidity with this group of plants.
Oh, I love that. And obviously other like everyday humidity hacks would be to get a humidifier, especially in the winter, if you can have the space for it. And some people say, you know, having the pebble trays with water to evaporate around the plant help. I know that's like a very debated topic, whether or not it works, but you might want to experiment and see if it works for your plants.
You know what? It does work under the right conditions. Obviously, if you have a gigantic room and one tiny little pebble tray, might not make enough humidity. But what I've always said is that every little bit helps when it comes, whether it's a pebble tray or adding a humidifier. And what we also need to remember is that plants naturally release moisture into the air. One of the best ways to combat humidity and low humidity around your plants is to group your plants together.
Yes.
Rather than having them in separate corners of the room, grow them together and they'll create essentially their own microclimate in which they'll have an area of localized humidity around the plants. So they're kind of social that way and they can all help each other and benefit each other by creating a little bit of area of higher humidity where your plants are together. But of course, when you think about higher humidity in winter, it's not just good for your plants, it's good for you too. Not only do you avoid dry skin, respiratory things, but it really does benefit just about everything in the home to have a little bit of extra humidity during dry winter periods, especially if you're in an overheated apartment.
You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Oh my gosh, two things. Number one, I'm living in a hotel right now because I'm traveling for work, and we have this old radiator in the hotel that's like right on the windowsill. And I've been waking up in the morning like so dry. And so I've been putting – and I have a few plants. I've acquired a few plants in this hotel.
I love it. Your plants away from home.
Oh, I'm crazy. Well, there was a Christmas cactus that was dying at a CVS that was $2.99. So I picked that up. I saw that it might have one more bloom, which it has bloomed. It's sitting next to me right now. And then there were paper whites on sale at Whole Foods for $3.99 because they were on sale. It's after Christmas. So I was like, I'll buy these paper whites. They'll bloom for me. And then, you know, they'll go dormant. It'll be fine. So
you are hooked and can't resist a plant bargain.
I'm a crazy plant lady.
No serious plant person can.
Yeah. But anyway, so my room has been really dry and it's been hard for me to sing. So I took a damp towel and put it on top of the radiator. So as the heat came out of the radiator, it would actually cause the damp towel, the water to evaporate. And my room has like turned into a jungle and I don't wake up like choking on dry heat anymore. It's been amazing.
Absolutely. So you wake up completely parched. Imagine how your plants are feeling.
Exactly.
See that like high humidity.
Totally. So that's my like new favorite humidity hack that I've been using. And then the other thing I wanted to say was when I go out of town, I put all my plants on my living room table grouped together. And when I come home, I'm always so nervous. Oh, I've been gone for a week. They're going to have problems. And then they're the happiest they've ever been. Like they've shot out inflorescence. Like they're living their best life because they've just been grouped together and I think enjoyed each other's transpiration a little bit.
Why not? They all help each other out.
Yeah, they're just like, we don't need our humans. Like, we just want to party together.
Exactly. Why not?
So funny.
Mom's away. The kids can get into trouble.
Exactly. So I put up a question on Instagram for if any listeners have any questions. And this was the most responded to call to action I've ever had on my Instagram. So I'm wondering, can I ask you a couple of listener questions?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we're going to start off with Bibliogato asks, why is the Calathea medallion harder to care for than others?
Calathea medallion probably likes a little bit lower light and higher humidity. I actually find that a lot of the round leaf Calatheas, the smaller, more compact ones, are a little less durable than some of the other varieties that are out there. Chances are it's just a matter of higher humidity, lower light, and that would actually be a really good candidate for a large terrarium.
Okay. Yeah, I love the idea of putting these guys in a terrarium. That would be the prettiest terrarium ever. Okay, Knit by the Bug says, what causes fading or loss of design?
Usually that's too bright of light. Leaves will fade on Calatheas, especially some of the ones with silver patterning, when the light is too bright. And it's kind of counterintuitive because we often think that brighter light gets better color on many other types of plants, where in this case, since the plants are native to the forest floor, it actually bleaches them out a little bit. If you reduce the light, put them in a little bit more shade, give it some time because they'll have to remanufacture those pigments, you'll be surprised. They'll actually kind of not only green up, purple up, but they'll really become more vibrant in their coloring with a little bit lower light.
That's so interesting because I feel like the main answer with like crotons, if crotons, are losing their color, it's because they're not getting enough light. So that's so interesting. It's the inverse.
Yeah, it's the inverse with this group of plants. So when you think about whether it's flower color or foliage color in your plants, research their natural habitat. And that'll give you a clue whether it's too much or too little. So if it's a plant that's native to full sun environments and it's fading out, it maybe needs brighter light. But in this case, since they're native to low light environments, it's too much light that can bleach out that foliage.
Got it. Audrey Platt wants to know, what's the best way to propagate this family?
Well, in reality, the best way is through divisions.
Okay.
Most of your Calatheas and Stromanthes will clump over time, and when they're happy, you'll be able to divide the plant in two or remove a small plantlet from it. The creeping varieties like prayer plants will actually root along their stems as they lay on the ground, and so you can actually take cuttings of Marantas, and some Stromanthes will do that. You'll actually see the stem will develop a little knuckle on it almost, a node, and some Stromanthes can be propagated by taking cuttings from those nodes. The best way is division, but with Marantas, you can actually take cuttings, some stem cuttings from them. Simple, put it in either a glass of water, allow it to produce roots before you pot it up, or you can put it in some cutting mix, tent it in a little miniature sort of cutting frame greenhouse with a plastic bag, and in a couple of weeks, you'll notice new roots starting to develop.
So when you're separating it, obviously those roots are going to be bunched up, so it's okay to kind of have to cut and break some of the roots in order to separate it, right?
Yes. If you're going to be dividing them, be gentle. Because Calatheas and Marantas need a lot of moisture, you want to disturb that root system as little as possible. Because if you do, that plant will, the leaves will roll up. It'll look like it's just about on its way out the door in terms of its growth before it recovers again. So when you're dividing them, be gentle. Try to leave as much of the roots as undisturbed as possible. Many people, when they divide them, they'll take a sharp knife and just cut right in half. Not disturb the root ball at all. That way you don't wind up losing any of those gorgeous leaves, which we've spent all that time growing. And that way they don't roll up and sort of crisp up because the roots get disturbed.
Got it. Here's another question from me. How do you tell the difference between Calathea and Stromanthe? Because I feel like they both have almost similarly patterned leaves. They have the bright colors. They have the stripes. So what's the difference in those two genera?
My understanding that the difference between the two genera has to do with the architecture and shape of the inflorescence, as well as some of the leaf and stem architecture, in which you have kind of the knuckles rather than a clumping plant. It is actually a zigzag grower in which it will grow up from the base. So there's a number of different factors. And as of right now, believe it or not, the taxonomy, the classification of this family is in a bit of flux at the moment, in which through recent DNA research, we're finding out that some of these plants that we thought were unrelated are more closely related than we did previously. So as of right now, we're still unlocking the true relationships between these two genera.
Got it. Okay, that's good to know. And Maranta versus Calathea. Calathea are more like pinstripey kind of looking leaves. Would your answer be very similar, that it's still being debated, or is there an easy rule of thumb with those two?
In this case, you're probably going to have to familiarize yourself with the individual varieties more than it is a one single thing you can use to separate it, because when it comes to distinguishing the genera, it's the flowers that are really more important than the leaves. Quite often, we don't see flowers on these plants. Occasionally, you will. Marantas will bloom. The prayer plant will bloom, and it has a tiny little lavender fan-shaped flower. Whereas when Calatheas bloom, many of them have clusters of bright golden yellow blooms down towards the base of the plant. So you'll see, if you looked up online a picture of a Maranta flower versus the Calathea flower, it would be tremendously different, but the leaves look very, very similar.
Got it. Okay, that's good to know. Zashley66 wants to know, why does a new leaf open while another one dies? So I guess, is it okay that you have leaves that are dying even if the plant is putting on more growth?
Yes. Many times plants will actually shed older leaves, not only because they're damaged, but in many cases they're sort of, I guess you would say, almost inefficient. As long as those new leaves that are coming up and unfurling are not dying off, you're doing okay. It's when you're losing all of the leaves or the new leaves that a problem that you really want to troubleshoot to make sure why that plant is sort of going in reverse. But many plants will actually shed their oldest leaves, which are usually found around the base of the plant and many times are much smaller than the new leaves. So that wouldn't be anything to worry about. It just depends how and where those leaves are being lost from.
Got it. What about yellow tips versus the brown tips?
The yellow tips on foliage can be also related to humidity, but in many cases that true yellowing at the tips of the foliage a lot of times has to do with inconsistent and irregular watering. So many plants, when they're if they're drying out too long, the leaf will brown from the tip, the furthest point, backwards. And that's usually if you allow the plants to go too dry between watering. Because Marantaceae, of where they're found in shaded, humid environments, they prefer even moisture. They don't like to go bone dry in between watering. So you want to keep up to make sure that your plants are not completely drying out between waterings. That way you won't get those yellow tips.
Yeah, they sound like a really good choice for plant parents that like to check in on their plants every day or every other day, as opposed to plant parents who want to water like only once a week or once every couple of weeks.
Exactly. They couldn't be any more opposite than a Sansevieria.
Exactly.
It will let you know in a very dramatic way when it is unhappy because you've neglected it.
Yeah, they're total drama queens.
Totally.
Do you have to water with filtered water with these guys because they're a little bit more sensitive, or is tap water okay? And obviously tap water varies depending on where you live.
Absolutely. Tap water does vary. Most Calatheas would prefer a low mineral content to your water. So if you have really, really hard water, I've noticed that some of these plants in this family can be a little fussy about that, but you don't have to go out and buy the finest of bottled waters for your Calatheas if you have decent water.
My biggest pet peeve is when my plants drink nicer water than I do.
Well, they are your children. You got to take care of them.
I know. You got to take care of them. Here's another question. The Calathea orbifolia, is it back in the USA as well as the Musaica? So I actually don't even know what that question means. Are there some, I'm guessing that it's hard to get these orbifolia and Musaicas?
Well, for a long time, Calatheas were uncommon in cultivation. And it seems like they really sort of disappeared from the houseplant trade, probably because they were a little bit fussy for people to grow. Both of those plants are still in cultivation in the U.S., and I'm sure the next question is, well, then where can I buy them?
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen them from nurseries throughout the southern U.S. and Florida. So they are out there. They're just a challenge to find. Usually if you can find a good plant foliage nursery and ask the buyer there if they might be able to source them, they could probably find them. And the more you ask, they'll realize that demand is there, and then they might try to start bringing them in. But both of those plants are still available in the U.S., although somewhat uncommon to find these days still.
Got it. I feel like Orbifolia is having a moment on Instagram, the one that has kind of the more – which for listeners, it's the one that has like the more rounded kind of larger leaves that's like a little bit lighter in color. Like it's not as colorful, I would say. I mean, is that how you would describe the Orbifolia?
It's a lighter grass
yeah.
with these beautiful silver brush strokes on it. Anyone who sees a photo of that plant is going to go, wow, I have to have it.
I have to have it, yeah. That's the first time I saw one in real life was at the Botanical Gardens because you guys use them as ground cover.
Absolutely. We have many of them in our greenhouse.
Colorado Beck wants to know, are they easy to grow from seed?
Never ever seen the seed available for you in terms of purchasing. And I know there's a lot of online sellers nowadays who are somewhat unscrupulous and selling essentially fake seeds where they find a gorgeous picture, claim it's that seed, but he says it is not. Your best bet is to make sure you actually get a growing plant to guarantee that you're going to get the real thing.
Yeah, that's smart. And also, I'd be too impatient for those gorgeous leaves to come in.
Yeah, growing this family from seed takes a lot of investment of time. They're not only delicate plants to grow, but from seed, they take a long time. So better to start off with a full-grown plant.
Okay, two more questions and then we'll be done. What happens if you see green patches on the underside of your leaves, specifically stromanthe, but I guess those purple undersides if there's a green patch?
That could be also a function of light, where they're losing a little bit of that purple coloring. It doesn't necessarily mean there's a pathogen or a disease. It just may be a variation in light to where the plant was not producing as much of that purple pigment.
Gotcha. And one last question. Any winter tips for caring for these guys as it gets darker and drier to get them through the winter?
I think there's only one word answer for that.
Humidity.
If it has a temporary terrarium for the winter or a little plastic bag terrarium that I talked about, which you can just take a transparent plastic bag over the top of the plant, doesn't have to be tied in a knot and sealed, but a couple of bamboo stakes to support it. That way it'll help keep that humidity up is the best thing you can do, or get some extra humidification in the home.
When in doubt, humidity with this family. That's the overall overarching takeaway from this conversation.
If you're going to answer one thing, humidity.
I love it. Well, Mark, will you just tell us again where we can find you and the amazing orchid exhibition and everything we can come visit the New York Botanical Garden to see?
Absolutely. If you want to come visit the New York Botanical Garden, we're open up in the Bronx. All the information is on our website at nybg.org. We're actually having an exhibition coming up around the theme of plant love, in which we are also highlighting a lot of our permanent collections, including a lot of the Marantaceae, Calatheas, Stromanthe, and all these wonderful conservatory specimens we have. So definitely come up here and see them in person, because I don't think any photograph can do these plants justice. And after that, the Orchid Show is just around the corner, which throughout the month of March into the beginning of April, we'll be once again celebrating in our 17th year, a spectacular exhibitions of orchids here at the New York Botanical Garden. This year's theme is the Orchid Show Singapore. So there's definitely a lot to see and a perfect place to get out of that cold and into some humidity.
I can't say enough for any of the New York-based plant friends, listeners. It's the most magical place, the Botanical Garden. I've gotten to go a bunch of times this year, and especially to beat these winter blues, give yourself the treat of going for an afternoon and just sitting in one of the big glass houses filled with plants. It's truly just, you feel your nervous system like relax and reset. It truly is amazing.
Nothing like a little bit of that green therapy on a winter day. We all have that fantasy of crawling inside our terrarium. Well, this is one you can walk, hang out, and be surrounded. Everything from 100-foot palm trees to every type of calathea imaginable.
Yes, life-size terrariums. And Mark, you're amazing. This interview has been amazing. Thank you for answering so many of these questions. I can't wait to go attend to my prayer plant after this.
Well, I've had a lot of great fun doing this, and I hope we get to do this again sometime soon. And I hope to finally see you up at the garden.
Yes, I'll see you soon.
Take care.
Oh my gosh, how amazing is Mark? I hope he comes back all the time for more episodes like this. Thank you, Mark, for joining us and giving us all of that incredible information. For your reminder, plant friends, the New York Botanical Orchid Show, Singapore, runs February 23rd to April 28th. For more information, visit nybg.org. It's linked in the show notes. But also, besides the orchid show, there is always something amazing going on at the New York Botanical Garden. So make sure that you give it a visit this year if you're on the East Coast. Also, they use Marantaceae all over the garden as ground cover. That's where I've seen a lot of stuff like the Orbifolia for the first time IRL. So go check it out. Thank you again, Wally Grow, for sponsoring this episode. And also thank you, Wally Grow, for being a company with a huge sustainability pledge. Fun fact about Wally Grow is that all the eco planters are actually made in the USA and they're made from 100% recycled plastic milk jugs. So cool. Plant friends, have you figured out that I'm obsessed with Wally Grow yet? If you're interested in installing a vertical wall of your own, head to wallygrow.com to see the endless options of indoor and outdoor setups you could install in your urban jungle, and use code BLOOM20 at checkout for 20% off your entire purchase. Also, if you want to be featured on the upcoming Plant Fail Lessons episode of Bloom and Grow Radio, head to the show notes for instructions or listen to last week's updates and announcements episode to learn how to submit. Until next week, my plant friends, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind-the-scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at @bloomandgrowradio. And plant friends, I'm here for you, so drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, plant friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There. I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, Plant Friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.